This is a Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm your host. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcast dude, and an all-around functional nerd. Today's show is the last one from the Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2015 that I'm going to have on SF Signal, and I've saved the best for last. I sat down with a friend, Kevin Eikenberry, who has a couple of books coming out, and I couldn't be happier for him. His story is a fairly unique one, and I hope you'll enjoy hearing about it. A little bit about Kevin. Kevin Eikenberry's head has been in the clouds since he was old enough to read. Ask him and he'll tell you that he still wants to be an astronaut. Kevin has a diverse background in space and space science education, a former manager of the world-renowned U.S. Space Camp program in Huntsville, Alabama, and a former executive of two Challenger Learning Centers. Kevin continues to work with space every day as a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, but he can't, apparently, get his friends in to see the Stargate. Kevin lives in Colorado with his wife and two daughters. His home is seldom a boring place. Kevin's science fiction and horror short fiction has appeared internationally through Andromeda Spaceways In-Flight magazine, Mind Flights, Twisted Dreams magazine, and most recently in the anthology Extreme Planets, available from a publisher whose name I can't pronounce. In October 2014, he signed a contract with Red Adept Publishing to publish his debut novel in late 2015. Kevin is a member of Fiction Foundry, Pikes Peak Writers, and is an alumna of the Superstars Writing Seminar. He can be found online at kevineikenberry.com. The Pikes Peak Writers Conference, or PPWC as the cool kids call it, takes place each year in April and plays home to a lot of authors of all levels and genres. You've got editors, you've got publishers, you've got publicists, you've got agents, you name it, they're there. And if you're interested in learning more about the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, visit www.pikespeakwriters.com. And now, my chat with Kevin. I am sitting here at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2015 with Kevin Eikenberry. And Kevin, why don't you tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm a science fiction author. I live here in Colorado Springs. Been in the Army more than 20 years, getting ready to leave active duty.
And I saw that on Facebook. Yeah.
It's been an exciting time, but I'm ready to leave it to younger folks. I'm going to go back to the reserves and finish out there, which has kind of been the plan all along. And the main thing was wanted to stay here in Colorado. Mm-hmm. The Army said, hey, it's time to move. And I said, no, thanks. But I'm here on faculty for the first time at the conference, and I actually have two novels coming out this year, so it's good timing.
Nice. And there's lots of people taking credit for you being here. I heard stories last night. It was kind of funny. Are you at any particular base or post, or I don't know what they call them?
I work at Peterson Air Force Base.
Oh, okay. But you are Army, not Air Force.
I am Army.
So you don't get access to the Stargate. Okay.
No.
Well, that's sad. That's really, really sad.
If only it were true.
Yeah. I mentioned that because Richard Dean Anderson mm-hmm. was here at Starfest.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in IT at work went and got, and like, so I hate Starfest. And I know that a lot of people like Starfest. But Starfest is like creation to me. It's, here's your ticket to get in the door. But if you want to get in the door and then get in this other door, here's your ticket. Yeah. And if you want to get in this other door, you can pay this ticket price. Yeah. And if you want to talk to this person, it's $20 more. Now, if you want a picture, it's $20 plus $50 for the picture. And if you want them to sign it, it's $20 plus $50 plus $75 for them to sign it.
Yeah.
Well, this guy did that whole thing. And he complained about that whole thing. But he's like, it was worth it to see, you know, Richard Dean Anderson. And I said, did you make some stupid MacGyver joke? He's like, no, didn't. I'm like, all right, good. Now, were you at Starfest?
No, I was not at Starfest.
You were not at Starfest. Okay.
No. Not this year. It's going to be hopefully when I can add to my slate, maybe next year. But right now I'm in the process of two novels for edit. One that I have the first set of edits done on, and then I get the second edits, or the first edits on the book Walkabout that's going to come out from Red Adept Publishing later this year. I get those today, so I'm a little nervous.
Nice. That's right. Earlier this morning, you were saying that you were going to go check and see if you got your edits.
Yeah, I've been checking my phone like every 10 minutes. I haven't gotten it yet, so.
So you know what will happen is you won't get them until like Monday.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be one of
you're still going to check
weekends.
Your phone every couple of hours.
Oh, yeah. I've already got the battery down like 50%, so
nice.
It's all good.
So what is that book about?
Walkabout's actually the story of a visionary Army captain from our time who was brought back to life about 300 years in the future. And he has 1 year to figure out his identity, who he was, and then whether or not the world he's been brought back to save is worth it or not.
Interesting. So he is brought back to save the world.
He's brought back to kind of save the world, but he doesn't have an idea of his identity when he first wakes up. So he has a lot of time to put all that together by experience and by living in this new world. But he's not quite sure that it's what he wants to
Why do they need him?
He has a specific knowledge set that's been forgotten. War, basically, as we know it, is no more. We don't teach it. We don't do anything with it. And they need somebody with his particular skill set, and they have a good genetic match for him that enables them to bring him back.
Sounds like a Gene Roddenberry story.
Maybe. Maybe. You know, it's probably got a little bit of that, and I know it has a little bit of a connotation of The Unincorporated Man by Eitan and Danny Collin, which Eitan and I have talked considerably about the book, and so he's like, no, just go for it. It's all good. So, it was a fun book to write, and it actually got its inception at this conference in 2013 was the first time. I was here.
Okay.
I was in this room with Lou Anders, and I was pitching him the other book that's coming out this year, Runs in the Family. But about 6 months after the conference, I sat down with the intent to outline the second book because I wanted to do it differently. The first book took me 18 months to write, and I wanted to do differently with an outline process that I'd never done before. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I ended up having a good conversation over email with Lou for about 4 weeks, and the product of that was a walkabout. I did the first draft in about 7 weeks.
Wow, awesome. Yeah, and Lou's a pretty good guy.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He really is.
So, now who's publishing Walkabout?
Walkabout's going to come out from Red Adept Publishing.
Okay.
And the title's going to change. We've got a short list, I think, of three right now that we're working on and kind of see where the publisher wants to go with those. But there were too many books with Walkabout in the title.
Well, and I immediately... So I'm a fan of the BBC's Coupling TV show.
Yeah.
And the three guys on there just explode about the movie Walkabout.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're like, oh, Walkabout, yeah, that was a great movie, blah, blah, blah. So every time you say that's what brings to my mind.
Well, you know, it starts and ends in Australia. And okay. Australia, I went there when I was in high school for the World Boy Scout Jamboree back in 1987, a long time ago. And there's a part of my heart that's there. It's just a beautiful place.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very cool.
I would love to go back again and see it, share it with my wife and my kids. It would be wonderful.
So were you nervous sitting in this room talking to Lou Anders?
You know, I really wasn't. I'd had the opportunity to have a lunch with him, and we talked a little bit there. And, you know me, I walked in and, you know, shook his hand and said, Eric Stratton, Rush Chairman, damn glad to meet you. And he just busted out laughing. And then, you know, you only have 10 minutes in the pitch session.
Yeah.
And they ended up having to basically physically separate us. We had such a good time. So it was good.
That is really good. Was. Yeah.
He didn't buy the book, but it's all right.
So I actually got to hold his Hugo after the Hugo ceremonies because someone walked up to him. I was standing next to him and I said, hey, congratulations. Someone walked up and said, can I get your autograph? And he's standing there holding this Hugo award, you know, clutching it.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he's like, because he needs to sign this autograph. And he's like, will you hold this? And I'm like, sure. And I'm holding his Hugo award and he's signing this autograph. And in my mind, I'm thinking, run, 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 run. Run! But I didn't run.
Yeah.
And he's just looking at me as he's signing, and so I handed it back to him. Here you go. So what was the process in getting that first book, like, to a publisher? Because you were pitching something to Lou.
Yeah. I ended up, I actually self-published it.
Okay.
And I learned a lot of valuable lessons about self-publishing. Specifically like editing and formatting things that, you know, did not go through the right functions with either Amazon or Kindle Worlds or whatever else, and trying to put all that together. Just, I had issues with it, so I took it down, and then I had a publisher that expressed some interest in it, and I ended up not going with them. I didn't like the contract that they offered, and then Strigidai Publishing, which is new here out of Colorado Springs, Hank and Holly Snyder run that, and Hank came to me and said, what about this book? And I said, well, I'd be willing to do so, but you know, I want to have it go through the entire process, be edited, write the right formats and everything else. And so started that. I signed with them in February to release it.
Okay.
But it actually may beat Walkabout out to market. I'm not sure, but Walkabout is still my debut because it's the first one I sold. I sold it back in October.
Gotcha. Okay. So how did that one get sold? I mean, Walkabout. What happened with that one? I mean, how did what was your process there?
I went about submitting it to a couple different places. I submitted it originally to Angry Robot as part of their open door.
Angry Robot.
Yeah. And it was right in the middle of, I guess, their sale and everything. So I ended up withdrawing it from them. So I had another small press that I had targeted, and I sent it to them, and they offered a contract. And I looked at the contract. It was not something I wanted to sign, so I went back to them with some negotiating points of, you know, let's change the amount of rights period. Let's look at the royalties a little bit. And they said, we're not going to negotiate at all. And
wow.
I walked away from them. And this was August of last year. And I was at that point thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to have to self-publish this book. And a friend of mine who I had written a story with that appeared in Andromeda Spaceways a few years ago, Pete Alden, he said, hey, I hear really good things about this small press named Red Adept out of the United States. So you might want to look at them. And so I looked at their website, and they had just had Kate Moretti, who's one of the authors, who had just hit the New York Times bestseller list. And I liked what I saw, and so I submitted the book to them. And in October, I got a phone call from Lynn McNamee, and she said, I want this book. And I said, okay, let's do it. And the contract was wonderful. They're the most professional group I've dealt with in publishing so far. And it was just awesome to go through that process with them.
Now, it's interesting. You've mentioned now twice rejecting contracts.
Yeah,
that's very interesting, because for a lot of debut authors, it's almost like a debut artist with a record company.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, they slap a contract down in front of you and they go, here you go, sign. And you go, well, I want to read it first. And they're like, no, just sign.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of gnashing of teeth, because, you know, the author part of you was going, it's a contract.
Right.
Just sign it. It's a contract. And the business side of you, I was fortunate to go to the Superstars Writing Seminar a couple years ago, and Eric Flint basically dissects contracts for you. And what I learned from that was there were some things in those contracts that just didn't sound right. You know, not getting your rights back till the full term of copyright, which is,
right,
you know, 70 years after your death. Well, that doesn't do me any good. And things, you know, little things like that. That, you know, again, yeah, it would have been real easy to say, yeah, I would have signed this. And had I not gone to Superstars and had that contract dissection from him, I would have signed that contract, hands down.
So you're mentioning Superstars, which is Kevin J. Anderson.
Yes.
That's another writing conference kind of thing.
It is.
And I've had Kevin on both podcasts, SF Signal and Functional Nerds. I respect the hell out of him, because, I mean, he does write a lot. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who don't like that for whatever reason, or they call him a hack and they call him all these names, you know. And it's like, well, but he's prolific, and he's pushing out content, and he's always writing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that you've hit Superstars, you've hit Pikes Peak Writers. I want to say that when I had Kevin on, he was one of the people that was talking about contracts, and that, like, he got screwed on a very, very early contract of his, where he wrote a book and he really liked the character, and he and his agent completely whiffed this contract piece, mm-hmm, and didn't realize that there was a clause in there that basically tied the character up with that publisher forever.
Mm.
And when they decided not to, like, publish it, and I could be misremembering this completely, and it could have been someone else.
Right.
It's not like I haven't done 500 hours of podcasts at this point, and they all start to blend together.
Oh, absolutely.
But I want to say that he had this character, he had this book, he published it. They didn't want the next book. They wanted something different. So he's like, okay, well, I've already written the next book. I'm going to take it over here. And they're like, look at the contract. And so he got a little screwed on that. Mm. So it is interesting. And I think that a lot of writers don't necessarily pay that much attention to the contract. And they kind of rely on their agent. I don't know that that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I think you have to take the time to read it. And you have to learn a little bit more about what contracts are all about. Because the minute you don't do that, you do miss something. And it would be real easy to sign a contract. Again, there's that ego part of you that's like, well, it's a contract. I should just sign it and be done with it and not worry about the terms. But if you look at it from the perspective of business, and that you have the capability later on, after you would get the rights back, to self-publish it or to take it to another house, you have to have the understanding of the contract to be able to go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was not an easy decision, but at the same time, there were things that I didn't like. And with one, you know, they said, nope, non-negotiable, this is our contract, and that was pretty easy.
Right.
And then with Walkabout, I actually talked with Kevin about that contract and said, hey, will you take a look at it? And he did, and said, you need to sign this contract.
Nice. So Walkabout is obviously science fiction.
Yes.
What's the other book?
Runs in the Family is more military science fiction.
Okay.
It takes my background as an armor officer and puts tank warfare in the future. And the problem with that one was that the...
Were you a tank jockey?
I was a tank jockey.
Okay.
That's what I was trained to do.
Oh, boy. Do you know Fred Kish?
No, I don't.
Okay. You need to talk to Fred.
Okay.
He's on Twitter.
Okay. I will find him. But yeah, that one, that was going to be just my whole, you know, future warfare story. And then this love story popped up in the middle of it. And so it became more of a challenge to write. So, but yeah, both science fiction, but one more military, one much more, I guess you could say softer. You're dealing with the human side of being thrust into the future, so.
Interesting. So what are the influences for Kevin Eikenberry? I mean, what were you reading or what were you experiencing that made you go, huh, I want to write science fiction?
You know, growing up, I read a lot of Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay.
I actually read a lot of Clarke. My dad had Clarke and Asimov in his office. He was a college professor, and so I read a lot of those. I gravitated more towards Clarke than Asimov. And then when I was in college and going through ROTC, one of the books that was thrown out for us to read was Starship Troopers. Mm. And so I read that. And it was funny, I made the comment not that long ago that when I read that book as a cadet, and I read that book again, you know, 15 years later as an officer, I realized that I could have learned a lot of life lessons in the Army from really paying attention more to what went on with Starship Troopers, because there's a lot of great leadership that's there. Those are probably my main influences. And then, you know, I had the idea to start writing Runs in the Family, and I had no clue what I was doing. And so I was teaching ROTC at the time in Indiana, and I talked to my boss and said, "Do you mind if I take a college class while I'm here?" "No, go for it." So I took a creative writing class, and I, you know, truth in lending, I was an English minor in college. And so I'd done a little bit of writing, so I took this class thinking it'll help me sharpen my skills and maybe give me an idea of what I want to do with this character and the story that have come to mind. And so I wrote the very first assignment, and it comes back with two words on it: "See me." And those are good or bad, you always know.
Right,
and
right.
So I you know, I talked to the professor, and she, "Why aren't you published?"
Nice.
And I had no answer to that. And so my whole focus then was to write a couple short fiction pieces and start trying to get those submitted and published. And then to try to start building the foundation to start this novel. So, yeah, I had no idea what I was doing as a writer. And this was 2009 that I started writing that book. And now it's 2015 and I'm sitting here. I have two books coming out. It's been crazy, but it's been good.
Well, and it's interesting because that's 6 years, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people think, oh, I write a book and then I get it published.
Mm-hmm.
That can take some time, you know, and it can take some revisions. And, you know, it could have been that you could have taken, you know, either one of these books and someone come back and say, "I really like the premise, but I don't like this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. Can you completely rewrite it and give me, you know, 60,000 new words?" Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't. And, you know, Runs in the Family now, the book, it was the one that took me 18 months to write the first draft. And that first draft versus what it is now, completely different things. Mm-hmm. So you grow so much over time as you write, and you learn the things to do, and you learn the things not to do, and you have to go back and fix the things not to do that you did before in the manuscript. Yeah. And, yeah, it could totally have turned out way differently. But I'm glad it didn't, because it's given me the chance to learn a lot more and then be able to really focus storytelling and get those first drafts out faster.
So you said that you had set about writing some short fiction.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come? I mean, did you manage to do it?
I did. I sold my first short story, one called Ship Mines and Ice Cream. I sold that to the webzine Mind Flights in 2011.
Okay.
That was my first short story sale, and then to date I've got about 12 that I've sold. I haven't sold any to professional markets yet. I've got one hanging in Analog right now that I got some tremendous personal feedback from Neil Clark on, from Clark's World. So I'm hoping that it can work its way through the wickets and, you know, maybe break that. But I have a horror story that made the professional rates for the Horror Writers Association, and I actually wrote that semi-autobiographical about what happened with me about 14 months ago.
Oh, yes.
So...
do you want to tell listeners about that? Or no?
Yeah, I can if you want.
Yeah, for it.
I went from being perfectly healthy on a Sunday afternoon to being in the ICU with a temperature over 104 within 24 hours.
Yep. And I was reading about it. You were posting.
Yeah, I posted that I was in the ICU, and you know, I at that point, I didn't have an idea of how serious it was. That was on Monday, and Tuesday morning, the intensivist comes on the floor, and he sits at the end of my bed and says, "You got to be honest, this is pretty serious. You know, we don't know what it is." And
not what you want to hear. There's like certain things you never want to hear. One from a doctor is, "We don't know what it is."
Yeah.
You don't want to hear the pilot in your plane going over the speaker going, "Oops."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so the staff there at the St. Francis Hospital here in Colorado Springs were phenomenal. But my infectious disease specialist was the guy that really, he came in and said, "Yeah, we don't know what it is, but we're going to treat it like this." And he had this whole plan of treatment. And Tuesday afternoon in the ICU, my temperature crested over 105. And I'm laying there, I'm packed in ice, I've got a fan on me, and I'm holding hands with my wife, and I'm freezing to death.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I realized how serious it was. And then they had hoped to get my fever to break down to 103 overnight, and it did. And the point where I knew things had turned, on the hospital rotations, the same person normally comes in at the same time every day to take blood or whatever else. So the first night I was in ICU, a woman came in about 4 o'clock to take blood and take my vital signs and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm raised in the South, so I'm a polite person. So, I'm waking up, I speak to her. And so she takes the blood and leaves. Well, Tuesday morning at 4 o'clock, she comes in, the light turns on, click. And the first thing she says is, "Oh, honey, you look so much better." And so that's when I knew I was turning the corner. And then I ended up spending another 8 days in the hospital once they got my temperature and everything in line. Then it was all about the swelling and the skin damage on my leg that really they had to fix. And that took a long time.
And did they discover what it was?
No.
They never discovered what it was.
I actually just had, on Monday, had my last appointment with the infectious disease specialist, and they had determined that I might have had strep A because I had a cut on my leg that had strep A when they swabbed it. But what actually happened on the upper part of my leg, no culture ever turned up anything.
Wow. Yeah, and I remember you were posting on Facebook. I think you wrote a couple blog posts about it. I mean, it was like a huge thing. You thought you were going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Changes your entire outlook.
It does. You know, it was, for me, you know, I moved home after 10 days in the hospital and set myself up in the basement with a window like this that I could look out of. And I stared out the window
a lot. He's pointing to the window that shows us the mountains here in Colorado Springs.
Yes. Very, very beautiful Pikes Peak.
But you notice I opened that up for
a minute. I know.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. A little snow cap up there.
I spent the better part of 2 weeks looking out the window and sleeping. I mean, I couldn't write. I love to listen to music, and I couldn't listen to music. I had Netflix on the TV, couldn't watch movies. I just couldn't maintain the focus. And so finally, I sent an email to Neil Clark. I had met Neil at Worldcon a couple years ago. And I said, "You know, I know you went through something like this.
Right.
How did you come back from it?" And so Neil and I exchanged a couple of wonderful emails. I really consider him a great friend now because of the way that he continued to reach out to me. And just basically, you know, take your time, your focus will come back, and, you know, enjoy life. Get to the point where you're not worried about what you just went through, but being more than thankful for what the next day is going to hold. And he was right. You know, after another week or so, I felt a little better. I wrote a 500-word short story and submitted it down in Australia to Antipodean SF, and it sold.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of got, you know, my legs back underneath me in reality.
Yeah.
And was able to get going again. But yeah, for about 3 weeks after everything had happened, I was pretty miserable.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember reading things like, you know, I'm up. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, and it's like, it was like little baby steps, but mm-hmm. but from your perspective, they were huge.
Yeah, oh, they were. I mean, St. Patrick's Day, my nurse came over, my at-home care nurse, and I said, you know, it was a fairly nice day outside, you know, typical Colorado spring, and I said, you know, can I go outside? And she said, are you walking more than, you know, from the couch to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, not really. And she said, start walking.
Yeah.
So I got upstairs, and my wife grabbed my arm, and so we walked down from our driveway to the mailbox, which is about 400 feet. Got to the mailbox, and I completely out of breath, tired. My legs were killing me, especially the right leg. And my wife's like, "Do you want me to go get the car?" And I, "No, I'm going to walk back."
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked back, and I came back in, and I made a little post about it. And it was one of the posts that just kind of exploded. I mean, even had David Brin and Gregory Benford say, you know, "Hey, way to go.
Yeah.
Fantastic." And so that had felt pretty good. But the best part about St. Patrick's Day, because, you know, I'm Scotch-Irish descent, I wanted to have a beer.
Yeah.
And I was on, you know, copious antibiotics, but my nurse said, you can split one. So one of my buddies, you know, I texted him. He's like, I'll be right there. So he came over and we split a beer. And it was, you know, at that point I knew, okay, things are really progressing now. And, yeah. And you know, it took a while for the skin to heal, but I was back at work by the middle of April.
Wow. Yeah, huge, yeah. Huge. And you talk about Neil. I think Neil's had to go through it twice now.
Yeah, I think with a heart attack and then I think with pacemaker surgery. Yeah.
So, rough.
Yeah.
Now, how is that informing your writing at all?
Yeah, as far as informing the writing, yeah. I always had trouble with, I would write a scene very quickly, and I wouldn't get a lot of the sensory stuff.
Right.
And so I'd have to go back in and add that as you go, you know, because you get the dialogue, you get the scene, you know,
sure.
And you leave out the other stuff. And I noticed that when I started writing again that I was taking a lot longer time developing the scene and really being present in it. Because mm-hmm. when you're in a hospital bed and you're not sleeping, I can't watch TV, so you're present in that time. And so you really start thinking about what's going on around you.
Right. The beep over here, mm-hmm. the... Yeah. You know, the drip,
yeah.
drip.
Yeah. You know, I had an oxygen line, so the bubbling, so it's humid air, so you're very cognizant of that. And then I knew what every sound on the IV machine was, mm-hmm. to the point that when it would, you know, make a certain clicking noise before the alarm would sound, I would punch the button to the nurse's station and be like, IV's done.
Yeah. The cuff would suddenly start going on your arm, maybe, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you become very aware of those things. And, you know, it's... For me, the transformation in that writing was, it was a lot easier for me to stay in a scene. And now works that I would normally had would be, you know, a short fiction especially. Okay, this is going to be a 3,000-word story. Well, it ends up being bloated to 6,000 because I've been in that moment a little bit too much. So now the editing process comes back. But
it's really, cute that you think 6,000 is bloated.
Well, for a 3,000-word story, yeah. I mean, it really...
Oh, I sit down to write a 3,000-word story, and before I know it, it's 15,000 words. So, shut the fuck up.
No, I've done that, too. I've done that, too. I thought, oh, hey, this is going to be... I did that. I had an idea for a 1,000-word story, and all of a sudden, it's 10,000 words, mm-hmm. and it's going to end up being a novella when I get it finished. But, yeah, it's the same thing.
And then I take it to my critique group, and someone always happens to say, this should be a novel. Shut up!
Yeah.
No!
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
So we're running a little low on time.
Sure.
Because I promised you about 30 minutes. You are, as I mentioned, on Facebook and Twitter. Why mm-hmm. don't you tell people your social media stuff?
Twitter, I'm at the writer Ike. There's another Kevin Eikenberry. He's a cousin of mine. He's a lawyer in Oklahoma.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Facebook... Kevin Eikenberry, author, is my author page there. Website is kevineikenberry.com. Mm-hmm. Eikenberry spelled Ikenberry. Be surprised how many times that gets screwed yeah. up.
And you do have a blog. Do you still blog?
I do blog a little bit on the website. I'm not blogging as much as I used to.
I'm not either.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the point where I get out about once every 2 weeks with all the editing that I'm doing. And I'll try to get back to doing a little bit more, but... This year has just been kind of crazy, so I haven't done a whole lot with it.
So you did Superstars. Now you're at Pikes Peak Writers.
Yep.
Are you doing any like science fiction type conventions this year? Are you going to be at Worldcon?
Yeah, I will be at Worldcon.
So JT and I are rooming together.
We're in the same hotel. Worldcon.
Yeah.
We're in the same hotel.
We're going to have fun.
Yeah. Worldcon. This is actually my last con for the summer. I'm taking a break because I need to get these edits done.
I am too, just because, my God, I've been doing a lot.
Yeah, I'm same boat. But then I'll go back. I have Worldcon. I've been invited to FenCon in Dallas.
Nice.
And I think it's in October this year, late September, early October. And then right back into Mile High Con
yep.
and the I'll normal con scene here.
Yeah. So Worldcon's in Spokane this year, so that's yes. cool. Like I said, I talked JT into going. This will be his first Worldcon, so hopefully he won't listen to this and he won't know that we plan on getting him drunk and then drawing on his face and leaving him somewhere where people can take pictures of him.
Exactly. So, the random con suite.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be awesome. So, release dates. Do you know when the books are coming out? Yeah, you said the Hank and Holly book is coming out soonish.
I have a feeling that will probably be out by the end of the summer. And
okay.
I'm expecting Walkabout by later this year, sometime November.
Did Holly edit the book?
Holly is editing the book.
So, has she sent you pages with little green circles on everything and green notes notes in the margins with her little green pen.
Oh yes.
Yeah, I want to break that green pen.
Yeah, I got the first 15 chapters back, and so three chapters are gone, and most it's red right now. I don't have the green pen; it's all okay. Red. So, but got those done. So I'm waiting on the next batch from her for those.
She used to at CSFWG. She would do everything in green.
Yep.
And you'd get these pages with just green everywhere. Yeah. Green. Yeah. And I wanted to buy her a box of blue pens or something. Yeah. You know?
Something different.
I was like, here you go. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you celebrate. Here you go.
Yeah. Here you go. Now I'm with you.
Okay.
They're colorful.
Obviously you're going to keep people updated. Do you have any like cover art yet?
No, I was hoping to have some promo cover art for Runs in the Family here this week, but it didn't work out. So okay. I'm hoping that we get that soon and I'll be able to post that. And then we've got to go through the actual titling process for Walkabout, make sure we've got the right one. And then that'll start the cover art process from Streetlight Graphics. We'll do that through Red Adept.
Do you have links on your website where people can go and read your fiction?
I do.
Awesome.
I do.
So anything else you want to tell our listeners before I let you go, Kevin?
No, fantastic. It's great to be here.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, appreciate it, Patrick.
I want to thank Kevin for putting up with me. I want to thank the Pikes Peak Writers Conference for inviting me to be on faculty again this year. Thanks to the Colorado Springs Marriott's cleaning staff for not telling M.B. Partlow about the Hawaiian punch and grape juice stains I managed to rub into the second floor conference room floor. That's it. That's all I got. Until next time, rest in peace, Mr. Riley B.B. King.
Oh, 3 o'clock in the morning, baby. Close my eyes. Well, I can't find my baby. No, and I can't be satisfied.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.